Welcome to Playwright, a podcast about creating and sharing new ways to play. My name is Ryan Heyman, also known as H. For the sake of convenience, that would be the letter on my Mario cap.
Oh, very nice. And I'm Ryan Quintel. Unfortunately, no Mario cap with Q on it, but I'll hold out hope.
Have you been playing this as much as I have? It's been hard to tear myself away.
You said it's not a race, but if it would be a race, you're beating me. So you've certainly seen more of it than I have, but you know, we were talking about it earlier. At one point I was shedding a tear as to how much I enjoy this game. It is so amazing and special, and it looks amazing on the Switch. It's one of the best looking games too. I'm blown away. How about you?
Yeah. For those of us who are listening in the future, we are talking about Super Mario Odyssey at the time of recording, and I am equally blown away by it and all of the different ideas that it brings to the table. It's going to make it really hard for us to try to pitch anything ourselves with trying to sound even the least bit creative. But, you know, maybe seeing something done really well will shake some of those creative juices loose. And I mean, ultimately, that's what we're here for, is just to try to keep up that discipline of always creating something. So even if we're staring straight into the face of one of the best and most original games that I've played in a long time, I'm sure we can come up with something cool. You will be bringing us our first idea today. What is it that you're bringing to the table?
Well, with Mario on the brain, I was thinking franchises, and I think this is a franchise that has had games in the past, but not a lot of modern or really great ones. I would like to pitch to you a Blade Runner game with a little bit of Shadow of War, maybe, kind of mixed into it.
Okay, so large microtransactions and really off-putting monetization models.
That's right, and a story that makes you cringe the whole time.
We're turning Harrison Ford into a sexy woman.
Yes, and you can actually set this thing during the Harrison Ford period or the kind of Ryan Gosling period of Blade Runner 2049. But in this kind of ruined LA, you are playing a Blade Runner, and it could be, you know, a name brand one or an off-brand Blade Runner with their own story. But you are tracking down and supposed to eliminate replicants. That is the job of a Blade Runner. For people that don't know Blade Runner, replicants are artificially created people that are, their phrase is more human than human, so they're very convincing. So this is almost a crime investigation sort of video game, where you have a bunch of replicants that you only find out vague details from the police office about. They're telling you things like, hey, we've heard reports of a replicant in Sector 2 or whatever, and you're going there, talking to people, having conversations, learning about who could be the replicant, and then once you have who you think your target is, maybe you have the ability to take notes or something, you have to research them, learn their schedule, when they're away from home, perhaps break in and look for evidence convincing you or the police department this person is a replicant. You have to maybe talk to their friends or family, and then finally you have to track down, chase, and eliminate the target that you've chosen. Now, here's the thing. There can either be a set number of these, or like I said, Shadow of War style, a kind of constantly filling number of these people in the game. But the game's central question is similar to the central question of the movies, which is you don't necessarily know if the target that you've chosen is a replicant or not. So at the end of the game, you kind of get a score or report card actually telling you, you know, you eliminated 20 replicants and 2 humans and made a mistake or some got away. And so I guess like a perfect run of the game would be getting an only replicant run. But that is my concept for a Blade Runner-y video game.
We'll start the clock there. This is cool. I like this idea of crime scene investigation, and I like the idea of trying to kind of like maneuver your way through crowds to try to find somebody who doesn't even stand out based on clues that you've received. I'm kind of seeing this like a hitman, except you don't know who your target is. You can find out who the target is based on what you observe in the level.
Yeah.
So what does the gameplay look like? What is a hook that you can bring? It's something new, interactive that you can add to the experience that is different from like a Hitman or an LA Noir.
I was thinking about the sort of feel of the world, and weirdly, if you took Shadow of War and mashed it together with something like a Grand Theft Auto, I think you could have something where when someone, you're tracking someone, or you're tracking someone who you suspect. So now you have to have a way of choosing a target and like writing that down in some kind of notebook. And then maybe at various points in the day, if you're trying to follow this person or follow associates of this person, you're able to write down notes, but the notes will almost have to be assisted in a way, if that makes sense. So you can choose like a time marker note, and that will say, remember the, and then you can choose from a list of objects, remember the house at 5 p.m. or whatever. And that's your way of building up evidence and saying like, okay, this is the times I need to remember to go back, because you might have, you know, 10 of these people that you're tracking at any one time. And you're like, okay, so my day today is going to be go see this guy, see if he goes to the coffee shop, go check on this woman and see, you know, if she's left the house or not, and then start talking to this person's friends. And, you know, you've written down some of these names or places to go to build your case that these people are replicants.
That could be cool. One of the things I've always wanted in like a Grand Theft Auto style game is for each citizen to have an identity and a life that they're living.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you accidentally run somebody over with your car, then that disrupts a certain portion of the simulation. You know, that person is out of the equation, and, you know, you can follow somebody around and learn things about them. But potentially any of these people could turn out to be like a major story component as far as whether the story would choose to conscript any of them into this replicant race. The cool thing is the ability to kind of hang back and watch and observe for a while.
Yeah.
Of course, if you're seen watching the same person too many times, maybe they can get spooked and leave town, or they can start to lay low or change their habits. And
right,
so
there are replicants, or there are people that you can just target, you miss entirely.
Yeah.
I'm glad you mentioned Hitman and Assassin's Creed, because I do imagine there would be parts of this that would feel like that kind of, I could almost call it Assassin's Creed crowd tech, where you're kind of rubbing shoulders as you, you know, wade through this world. But I think what we haven't seen a really good modern game pull off is, and maybe we'll get this with CD Projekt's upcoming game Cyberpunk 2020 something, a really great looking Blade Runner type of world. Like, you're flying cars and your dirtiness and areas where it's just all fog and neon, and you are tracking someone in potentially something that, you know, a bad part of town that's very hostile, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I like the, of course, the Blade Runner set and the whole kind of visual identity has become iconic. And yeah, it's not something I mean, it inspired a lot of other artistic directions in sci-fi, but it's not something that you see a lot in video games even today, which is, yeah, a bit surprising seeing how seminal it was.
I want to ask you, because I've been wafting between if this should be a story linear type of thing where, you know, you learn about these targets, they're almost like Zelda dungeons, right? Because they're each a big substantial puzzle that you're solving in different ways. And then maybe even how you chase them down and eliminate these targets are a puzzle in it of themselves, versus you're a Blade Runner, it's an open world, there's kind of forever potentially replicants, and, you know, you're just filling in slot after slot after slot. You're trying to rack up as many captures or kills or eliminations as you can.
Yeah, that's the thing about Shadow of Mordor that was always a little... it does such a good job of making these, for all intents and purposes, kind of procedurally generated enemies feel important and feel like they have personalities and that they're each distinct. But then it would drop you into a story mission, and it's like, this is one orc that was designed and voiced specifically for this role in the story, and it's going to be the same for everyone's story, and it just kind of takes something out of that part of the experience. And so maybe there's some way of keeping the kind of randomness, keeping the anonymity of these characters, because if you knew the right answer, if you could just look it up online, then it becomes less fun. You know, it kind of keeps people honest, right, if things are a little bit more random. But I guess interjecting the story in a way that doesn't necessitate any one character looking or behaving in a certain way, or if you do have characters that are necessary to tell the story, maybe they can look different in each player's game, kind of generated differently so that each player still feels like they're having a unique experience.
You know, if you did do a linear story-based thing, I would love to consider maybe some story where you are downloading the memories of these replicants and you're almost Edith Finch style, like experiencing pieces of their life. And at the end, you kind of decide that you don't want to be a Blade Runner anymore. And, you know, there's a, you know, the twist and the turn is you have to escape from being a Blade Runner. Or also, I was playing with the idea at some point of, should it be you're trying to stay neutral in an ongoing war, and there's, imagine the Shadow of War stack of, or Shadow of Mordor stack of characters, but instead of just a line in front of you, a line on the left and right of law enforcement and replicants, right, and you're choosing, do I want to, you know, kind of help along the replicant cause, because we know in this future it doesn't go well for them necessarily, and work against the police department, or do I want to be kind of more of the lawful evil almost and hunt down replicants?
Yeah, I like being able to take sides in this and not necessarily just say you are a Blade Runner, therefore this is your job. To be able to have some agency in, you can just be like an assassin for hire, and not really discriminate between killing robots or humans. You could be just taking the stand for the replicants themselves and not harming any of them. Just kind of seeing how your actions affect the balance of power on this hierarchy of randomly generated enemies that would populate the power structures of these two branches.
I bet as you kind of pervasively eliminated one side or the other, you could fork the story in such a way, hopefully in a way that is meaningful but still would fit a lot of people's play styles, to find out, say you eliminate a bunch of replicants and you just decide to side as the police officers, and you, because you eliminate a bunch of replicants, you actually find out in the story that you are a replicant and vice versa, right? Like, you are the human that chose to eliminate humans in order to save the replicants.
Would this character necessarily be a replicant or not be a replicant as like a matter of the character, or would that be something that I guess the story would kind of evolve based on your choices into one of those two directions?
Blade Runner as a film, aside from the fantastic visuals and soundtrack and all that stuff, keeps going back and forth on the idea of free will and even memory, and are the memories that you see and experience your own, or have they been programmed into you? And so it would be interesting to have a story in an open world, almost Far Cry-esque format game, actually respond a little bit more to the choice that you made, mm-hmm, rather than just kind of follow the kind of story beats are going to happen as they are, and then the rest of the time, oh, I'm shooting eagles or something. Yeah.
And maybe you never learn whether you're a replicant or not.
And that would actually be the most Blade Runner decision of all.
Yep. Anyways, that's the time for that one. So do you have a name for this particular game?
Obviously, we could just say Blade Runner. You know, we attach a video gamey add-on to it, like the Blade Runner Replicant War or something.
Cool. I don't have any better ideas. So Blade Runner Replicant War, we can call it that. I will move on to my pitch now. This one's also a little bit more amorphous. This isn't as gamey as much as it is a simulation. I should also preface that this might be exactly what Dwarf Fortress is, but I don't really understand Dwarf Fortress. even though I've taken a class on how to play Dwarf Fortress, I still don't even really understand what it is.
This is good. I've never played Dwarf Fortress, so at minimum, we're a podcast of two people talking about Dwarf Fortress who don't know anything about it.
Cool. So I'm not trying to step on any toes if that's exactly what this is, but basically what I want to do is not a text adventure, because you're not controlling a character necessarily. You're more kind of controlling a god or some force that has the ability to edit and make changes like you would in like a universe sandbox. You know, you aren't playing a character, but you can still affect things that happen inside the universe. And this is basically a sandbox to simulate history being written and culture evolving. And so you can just kind of create a seed of a society, and it just kind of evolves as a culture would. And you can kind of watch it throughout the years, and you can, you know, speed up or move around time and forward decades or centuries or millennia and see what kind of things it's developed and what paths it's gone down and its encounters with other nations and stuff. And you can go back into the past and you can seed in like stories or legends, or you can create events like a flood that turns into a legend, which turns into like a religious doctrine, which you then they use the name of one of the early leaders as like a casual swear or something like that down the line. But basically it's just, you know, changing aspects of a culture's history and being able to somehow simulate how that would affect not only government and the politics going forward, but also on like a cultural level. Like they form a festival every year celebrating this major event in history, or this word has taken on this meaning in the lexicon of this culture. So this might be beyond the scope of what is possible, but I've seen some pretty impressive simulations out there. Something like that, but for culture and history. So we'll start the clock.
This gotta be one of my favorite pitches I've heard on the show. I know you said it was just a seed, but it's such a good one. I love this idea. I love the seeding, especially the part where you're seeding stories and legends. I'm trying to think in my head almost how you almost need a system to, as this society develops in the future, maybe as a society develops, it unlocks, you know, your own abilities. So you get the ability down the line to, you know, have a particular story told, and then you're like, okay, well, now I'm going to go back in time and see what happens when I tell them that story and blow their, you know, primitive minds, if you will.
Yeah, little things along the way. Like, obviously, there are stories in Greek mythology about giant scorpions, and that must be because there are scorpions in Greece. And so if you introduce something as small as like a new animal or a new tree into a culture's history long enough ago, then it becomes a part of the cultural identity years in the future.
You know me, I'm always trying to take some games like this and almost make them session-based. I love playing a game called Factorio, which is very session-based, mm-hmm. Get in and automate. And you can have a super long game, but I almost would think it's interesting to hear, what if you build these civilizations and they're essentially have like a, what we'll call a TTA, a time to Armageddon. And you're essentially trying to make the longest lasting civilization that you can. So if time is running at a very fast scale, you're like, oh, when I see this set of variables at these times, you know, they can't make it past the 80s. And then you have some that make it into way future tech. And maybe that's how you actually get your stories, right? Of civilizations past, those can be, you know, somehow condensed into ideas or stories or even technologies or animals or something that you can then give to your next society.
It would be interesting if this game could be made in collaboration with like actual anthropologists and archaeologists and people who have studied cultures in the past and the way that they spread ideas and proliferate and expand into the world. And, you know, we have so many simulations about the practical side of warfare. Like, if you have enough guns, if you have the most advanced technology, if you have the most advantageous locations on the map, then you can win a war. But taking this more kind of like Jared Diamond approach of, you know, what kind of ideas make the strongest civilization, or what would you have to implant culturally that would make the society endure through hardships, or what ideas spread the fastest? This kind of thing of a cultural imperialism, of like staying power, you know, that even though there are cultures that have come and gone in the past, you know, we still tell the stories of the Greeks and Romans, and, you know, they aren't really around anymore. I mean, there still is a nation of Greece and still is a city of Rome, but it's not the Greek Empire or the Roman Empire, you know? So kind of taking this as an educational tool, what makes a national identity endure more than the nation itself?
The perfect version of this game, right, is some amazing utopia of what Peter Monolou tried to accomplish and what Spore has tried to do, and also like a little bit of the Sid Meier civilization stuff. And I could see one of your ways that you start this run of civilization or whatever is literally drawing some lines and choosing how the continents on the planet will split apart. You know, because that in and of itself, if you draw like two halves, just slice the thing in half and see what happens, versus I'm going to make 20 islands and just see what happens with all these islands, because those people would theoretically not know about each other for hundreds of years until they develop, you know, the ability to travel by sea or whatever. Starting from a decision that huge and meaningful, and then, okay, let's go back in time and see what happens when this culture is pretty ravaged early on and this other culture I allow to flourish, and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and I'm always really interested in different cultures all throughout the world have such different aesthetic sensibilities.
Yes.
Like, you look at the Far Eastern, the Chinese, the Japanese style of buildings, of armor, of art, and there are aspects that it shares with the European or the Native American or South American style of art and of housing or whatever it is. But, you know, they're just so different, but they're all kind of serving the same purposes. And so getting to the root of like what influences the decisions that lead a culture's homes and art and weapons and tools to evolve in a certain way.
Yeah. And you know what? I'm so glad you pitched this week, because my parents were in town and I went with them to the Stanford Art Museum. And of course they have, you know, artwork from Mexico and Africa and China and Japan and India and all these wonderful places on display. And you can see so much of the aesthetics of these things are born from what they had available to them in their environment. Right? So the colors of these cultures are very much embedded by what stones and materials they had to work with, the patterns and the samurai armor very much inspired by dragons and monsters, because they had, you know, lizards and reptiles in the region. Mm-hmm. To see what happens when you plant different wildlife early on. Could you imagine later on in this game, it somehow has a system that figures out a way to generate some sort of music or tones or beats that you can hear, you know, when you zoom in on each of the individual lands, you're like, whoa, they've stumbled upon some amazing music over here. Like, and the ability to, you know, save that in some way or share it out. You're almost like an omnipotent being who's collecting things for his own all-knowing museum.
I'm interested in these systems kind of compounding upon each other, of cultures when they come in contact with one another based on the types of beliefs that they formed up to that point, they will or won't be receptive to, you know, intermixing with other groups that, you know, come in contact with them. And that'll affect the way that society evolves, that the way that they interact in the shared spaces and, you know, create the kinds of societal hierarchies, which leads to strife, which leads to different types of art and ideas emerging. And this is all very complicated, and I can't even begin to imagine how this would be plotted out in an interactive video game fashion, but it would give a lot of insight into why things are the way that they are. These things happen on such a slow scale that we look back at history and we're just like, well, you know what? People are just different than one another.
Right.
But really, you know, we've all, I guess, migrated outwards from Africa, and we've all kind of just basically had the same idea of, like, I just want to survive. And we've all just picked different ways to do that, had different trials to overcome, had different encounters with nature, with each other. And, you know, that caused us all to form these very different cultures. And that's cool. But it would be neat if there was a way to kind of demystify that process, to make this really accessible, to be able to sit down, to watch it happen, to change something and see how one little change, this butterfly effect, kind of ripples out to the rest of history.
One of the things that I love about this as that kind of light touch education tool, and the way that Mini Metro really makes you feel bad for, you know, urban city planners who are making public transportation, is you can take cues from history, right? Like, mankind as a civilization, I assume this is mostly an Earth-ish sort of planet, but maybe it's not. There's a cool sci-fi version of that it's not. So many times we make decisions and you see the best of us and the worst of us when we're pushed and strapped in a moment of crisis, right? It was economic downturn that created Nazi Germany. It was also the Great Depression that stirred some of America's greatest social change. So you can see it both ways. So depending on who you're kind of squeezing, and I'm not saying it's just all bad things you can do to these people, but who you're squeezing and when you're squeezing and who you're giving things to and allowing to prosper can really end up playing a very interesting role. And it makes you think of it more of people are really a literally, in this case, a product of their environment.
That's all the time we have for that. I don't have a great name for this, so I'm just going to give it a placeholder name for now. Not that it's going to end up with a better name later, but I want something that sounds very, like, textbooky. And so I'm going to call this Language of Legend, because that's kind of the two aspects of the simulation that I have the most faith in at this moment, the development of language, the development of legends. So let's leave it there. And if anyone has any better ideas, I would love to hear that. I think that there has to be better names out there. So
I was worried you were going to say Encarta, so it's already an upgrade.
If you would like to get in contact with us to add anything to any of the pitches that we've made so far, or to pitch your own game ideas, as we will be reading one of your pitches in just a moment here, you can email us, playwrightcast@gmail.com, or you can go on to playwrightcast.com/pitch, where you can pitch your own ideas. Go to the main playwrightcast.com, and you can look at it, an archive of all of our previous episodes. You can listen to them there. You can comment on an individual show if you want to continue to engage in that conversation. So let us take a look at somebody who has already written in. This is the second half of an email we read a couple shows ago from David Vandergren. Again, apologies if the pronunciation is not correct, but he comes back and says, second idea, genre, story-driven 8-bit RPG to the moon style game. You are a middle-aged woman, and you play through a day in your life as a cleaner for the elderly. You have lots of interactions with them and other people in your day, also your husband and two children. You always have two or three dialogue options, but they are of little consequence to the story or the following events. Playing through the day should last about 20 minutes. At the end of the day, you congratulate yourself on a day well spent, title card, and you see the same date again. You play through the day again, but the people are reacting slightly differently to you than the previous playthrough. However, your possible responses and behavior stays the same. People are less understanding of you and your responses that previously seemed okay and are now, in the new context, maybe not so. Example, when you come home, your husband asks how your day was, and you reply that you have had a wonderful day and your clients are all very nice. And the next day, your husband says, I had an awful day, a run-in with my boss, who told me I had disappointed him in the last meeting. Remember, your dialogue is still the same, as if he didn't say anything like that at all. Although some of the social interactions are accurate and will not change through any playthrough. You play a total of 4 playthroughs, at the end of which you fully realize that the person you are playing has lost touch with most of reality and is alienating most of the people around her. And as she tells herself that this was a great day, this is an illusion, and the main character is probably mentally ill. Not a very uplifting game, but still a very interesting idea, I think. So, that is David's pitch. Let's see where we can take that. Let us go ahead and start the clock.
Oof, this is heavy. We have a heavy one this week.
This is an interesting idea, this idea that you set up a baseline of normality. You know, your first playthrough this day is just kind of goes the way that you would expect it to go. Everyone's behaving in a very appropriate way. But then as time goes on, things start to break down. You've seen this kind of thing in psychological horror type games, but it would be interesting if it wasn't in a horror setting, more of this kind of personal drama, this maybe kind of existential horror in a way of growing older and maybe forming some form of dementia. It really got me thinking about, it would be really cool if there was a game that could really simulate this feeling of dementia, of losing your memory and losing your sense of where you are and when you are in time. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of games that do a lot of, you know, jumping back and forth in timelines. And so maybe it could be couched in something like that, you know, where a player would be playing through a scene and say, oh, you know, obviously this is a flashback because everything looks like the 1950s again and it's in sepia tone and it's giving me all the signs that it's a flashback.
Right.
And then the scene starts to devolve and you're like, why are people acting so weird? And you just keep playing through the game and just like everyone's just acting really weird, like they've all gone crazy. And then towards the end of the game, you start to realize maybe I'm the one that's a little odd and that's a little off. It could be a massive gaslighting like you would see on a Twilight Zone episode. It could be that, you know, your character is the only one who is sane and everyone else is, you know, drinking bad tap water or something. Or maybe like you are really kind of losing your faculties and like a lot of people do as they grow older.
Yeah, there's something about this game pitch to me, David, that almost sounds like it's from the Twilight Zone. Right.
Yeah.
I'm trying to process. I think it's a really unique idea. And I'm going through my head and racking my brain saying, like, how do I make sure that the nature of having to repeat this stays fresh feeling? I guess it's experiencing all the dialogue that's around you. I'm trying to figure out if there's, you know, some additional layering that can happen that makes this more and more, you know, I hate to use the term upsetting, but engaging in a way. Mm-hmm. Whether it's just through, it could, you know, could be as simple as music and tone and that kind of thing, but maybe it's, you know, something more traditional gameplay.
What do you mean by that? How so?
I guess maybe it's literally like the button prompts that you use the first time around to say the things change, or maybe it's the amount of time you have to say them changes, or the series of things you have to do to get to the dialogue has to change. If any of that makes sense, like I'm trying to create a sense of like, oh, I had to, you know, interact with the, you know, the shelf with the shoes to get her to say the shoe thing before. And now I am, you know, interacting with some other part of the environment.
Alternatively, if you kind of maintain full control of your character, but things happening around you give you the impression that the world isn't constant, that the rules that you're used to are breaking down. Maybe something is in your inventory that wasn't there before because you don't remember putting it in there, or you can still locomote and you can still interact in the way that, you know, you feel like you're okay. Like a lot of elderly people with Alzheimer's do feel like they're okay and everything else has just gone weird for some reason.
Maybe even on top of that, one of the things I think could be inspiring to this sort of experience is what Stanley Kubrick does in The Shining, which is when you watch the movie, and anybody that has really studied it has done like layouts of the hotel, And many of the scenes in that movie take place in rooms that, based on the layout of the hotel, could not possibly be where they are. So in your second time through this game, for example, the door that took you to the kitchen last time now takes you to your bedroom. We're trying to handle this as tastefully as we can, but that general feeling of disorientation or things not being quite what you remember or what you thought they were, and how far you can push those things. And maybe like any progressive system, it starts off as like, the dining room had six chairs in it instead of three before, and then it's getting all the way into rooms are switching on you. And maybe even eventually your controls of, you know, navigating the space become altered in some way.
People ask you for information that you've not been given because they're referencing a time that you, as the character, can't remember. It's kind of like a memento in that way, but all of it feels like a continuous day-to-day experience for you. You don't feel like anything has gone wrong, but obviously things are tricky. But I do also like this idea of flashbacks because, you know, I've had grandparents go through the Alzheimer's battle before, and a lot of the times they ask about their children like they were still, you know, young and that they should be coming home soon because dinner's almost ready. And, you know, this idea of like, oh, I think that I'm still in 1973. Like, how is this? And so being able to relocate a player in time in an effective and contiguous way that makes sense to us, but doesn't make sense to any of the other characters in the game.
One thing I do know about that sort of process is in the way it affects a lot of people, it's almost like new information can't really write to the hard drive in the way that old information that was there and remembered for a long time is still accessible to these people. So the flashback mechanics and system could be a very great way of expressing that. And maybe there's even times where there's internal dialogue with your character who is pointing out how odd everyone else is, right? Because these people don't necessarily, you know, they're still them inside. And people, if they ask you about something old, maybe that's what triggers a flashback, or you're able to recall it with, you know, perfect clarity.
I guess having a better sense of the timeline with the older stuff than the newer stuff. And so when somebody does ask about something cold, then we the player, or something old, and we the player feel better about responding to that because, you know, that is more familiar to us. We've been able to make better sense of putting that narrative in order than the present day stuff.
And I think depending on how you handle the flashbacks or the setting that you put them, if you're always in your own home, which is where these people would typically be cared for, if you're always in your own home, then the furniture and it doesn't have to so drastically alter that it's obvious necessarily that you're time jumping in some instances. So if you wanted the time thing to be more of a mystery, I think you could set it in such a way that maybe it almost feels more like seasons than years.
Anyways, we've just about exhausted our time, speaking of timelines, with that one. So before we forget that this conversation ever happened, what are we going to call this game? Because David does not have a name that he wants to give this one. So let's see if we can come up with something really striking. Maybe like Lost in Time or Lost in Memory or something like that.
What if we just called it like Remembrance?
Remembrance? Okay. Yeah, that's fine. One word. This is Remembrance, proposed by David Vandergrint. And if you would like to pitch anything, as we said before, you can do that. Go ahead and email us at playwrightcast@gmail.com or drop us a line, playwrightcast.com/pitch, and we will read it on a future show. And feel free to pitch as many as you want. You know, there's really no limit. Like, we will happily accrue a backlog. We're always happy. We will eventually get to each of the pitches that we receive. So feel free to send those in and we will discuss and see where we can take those.
Yeah, and as David did here, people have sent in beautiful, wonderful, detailed pitches, and don't be afraid to send in something shorter of like, I've always wanted to play a game that's kind of like game A and kind of like game B. We can still do stuff with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
absolutely.
While you're sending in your pitch, why don't you go over to Bandcamp and listen to Hello World? It's our theme song from Proto Dome off his album Blue Noise. It's very, very good.
Yes, indeed. Anyways, let's end the show with one little miniature idea. If this can come from you, what do you have for us to just give us a little wet of the whistle on the way out?
H, we're always pitching small and unique and sometimes ambitiously different games on this show, so I wanted to pitch a game that I know would sell.
Okay.
So this week I leave you with Battlefield Call of Duty Battlefront World War II, the new Colossus.
Ooh, all right. See what you can do with that. We'll catch you next week.
Bye.